as we are gathered together, may we remember, when you share with me what is most important to you, that is when listening begins. When I show you that I hear you, when I say that your life matters, that is where compassion begins. When I open the door to greet you, that is where hospitality begins. When I venture out to bring you to shelter, that is where love begins. When I risk my comfort to ease your suffering, when I act against hatred, violence, and injustice, that is where courage begins. When we experience the full presence of each other because of our shared humanity, because of our differences, that is where holy gratitude begins. May this space be a table that is not complete until all are welcome. May this place be a space of beauty, where together we create a series of miracles, and where all that we share is sacred. I once spent part of an afternoon with an amiable man who had lost his nouns and quite a few of his other words as well. It was a very pleasant afternoon. For some time, we looked out the window at the sky. He gestured and talked about, I think, the clouds. I just listened to him, and I knew exactly what he meant. Communication is only 70% words, after all. He said to me, "It's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's beautiful." He then took me on a tour of all the original artwork that adorned the walls and countertops in his small assisted living apartment. I listened as he gestured and spoke scrambled words, and I knew just what he was telling me. "Isn't this amazing? Isn't this beautiful? Isn't this remarkable?" I spent the afternoon completely present, listening deeply, experiencing beauty and awe in such ordinary and extraordinary things. I was grateful when I left that this man, during the end of his life, was steeped in such beauty and that he shared it with me. "Beauty is the harvest of presence," says the poet David White. "Beauty is an achieved state of both deep attention and self-forgetting," he explains. "The self-forgetting of seeing, hearing, smelling, or touching that erases our separation, our distance, and our fear of the other." Beauty, I find, does bring me entirely to the present. Beauty, whether I experience a rose on a bush outside my home, or Mount Hood in the distance, or a toddler laughing, pulls me out of myself, and I am present. I am in a wordless state of enjoyment and pleasure, sometimes awe, myself and its concerns forgotten in this splash of experience. Beauty surrounds us every day, even on bad days, even when we are in pain. But unless we notice it, it might as well not exist at all. I ignore beauty all the time. I rush past the roses outside my door to the car. I don't look up and see Mount Hood on the horizon. The toddler laughing just becomes background noise, not a moment of joyful experience. Presence, being present, noticing, attending, is a requirement for experiencing beauty. But if we do our part, the beautiful does its part as well, drawing us in, pulling us out of ourselves, so we, as thinking beings, vanish. We are in a deeper, more fundamental relationship with what is before us. Our attention, combined with beauty's ability to attract, brings us into a state of delightful presence. Beauty is indeed the harvest of presence, and it is holy. Listening is one way that we become present to the world. Listening is one way that we experience beauty. We can experience the beauty of music, of birdsong, of wind. Hearing is a biological process. We have ears, which process sounds from the world and sends signals to our brain. Listening, however, is beyond hearing. It is an act of attention and a desire to make meaning out of sounds. We choose to attend to listen to some sounds and not to others. Those that study sound and listening claim that listening more than any other sense brings us fully to our environment. It is the most all-encompassing of all of our senses. However, listening with complete attention is not easy. There is a story of a young girl who is sent to a wise teacher's palace to learn about life. The teacher gave her a spoon with a few drops of oil, and he told her to walk around his palace and see all the beautiful tapestries and paintings and return with the oil in the spoon. She did return with the oil, but she had focused so on the oil, she had seen none of its beauty. So she set off again and enjoyed the beauty, but when she returned, it was with an empty spoon. This is the situation we often find ourselves in. We can't truly listen while at the same time attending to ourselves. Listening fully calls us, in White's word, to achieve a state of both deep attention and self-forgetting that erases our separation, our distance, and our fear of the other. Many of us believe, probably most of us, in the interconnectedness of all life and all beings, but still experience in our relationships with many people separation, distance, and fear. The promise of full presence with another is that those things will fall away and we will feel the connection we intellectually acknowledge to be true and yearn to experience. In that connection, we get to see the beauty of another person. But much gets in the way of really listening. We often carry our own spoonfuls of oil that we are anxious to attend to. We judge people, how they look, their clothes, the sound of their voice. We are anxious that people are judging us and worry that what we might say won't be smart or interesting enough. We only half attend because we are texting or watching TV or thinking about some problem in our life. We spend a lot of the time while the other person is talking, thinking about what we are going to say, or what advice we're going to give them, or a counter-argument that we might make. Listening to understand takes courage and determination, but it is worth the effort. We may discover beauty and connection. It also might change us. A fifth-grade boy, Nick Penna, describes the experience of listening like this. When you listen, you reach into dark corners and you pull out your wonders. When you listen, your ideas come in and out like they were waiting in line. Your ears don't always listen. It can be your brain, your fingers, your toes. You can listen anywhere. Your mind might not want to go. If you listen, you can find the answers to questions you didn't even know. If you have listened truly, you won't find yourself alone. Long before I was a minister, I was participating in a church activity where we were paired with other people. I was paired with a man who had years ago been in a severe car accident and now spoke in a way that was very difficult to understand. I have an auto-processing disability that makes some people's speech very difficult to discern. And his was one of those. We had always been friendly. Like I said, only 7% of communication is the words. But I was terrified of having a conversation with him where I would actually have to know the content of his speech. For me, being paired with him was a nightmare where I was sure I would completely embarrass myself or I would hurt his feelings. But I was determined not to fail at this task, so I breathed, leaned forward, and listened with everything that I had. And what I found was that when I fully listened, I could understand him, and that when I was present, he did his part, just as the beautiful does, pulling me out of myself into a presence that we both shared. I heard the story of his life, about the accident, and what he had learned along the way. He was exceptionally kind. And when I had to ask him to repeat himself from time to time, he would laugh without judgment, and we would try again. The fear I had of appearing stupid disappeared, and the distance between us vanished. I felt a connection to him and saw the beauty of his spirit. While listeners benefit from listening, those that have been heard benefit even more. Really listening to someone is an act of love and compassion. Being listened to and really heard brings forth hidden possibilities, or our Buddha nature, or the deep, still voice within, or whatever we call that wisdom that resides inside us. Being heard can help people discover speech itself. After college in the early 1900s, Carl Jung served at a mental hospital in Zurich. At the hospital were a group of women who were so withdrawn, they no longer spoke. The doctors at the hospital decided that they had no language and spent treatment time giving them words and trying to get them to speak. They talked at them with no results. Jung decided instead to listen to the women. He would sit and pay attention to them. He discovered that each woman had a set of repetitive movements and sounds. He tried to imitate them, mirroring back their own mirrors, or their own movements and sounds. And sometimes a word would come to him, and he would say it with a gesture. After a while, the women recognized their gesture, and they began to speak the word. Slowly, as Jung listened deeply, they rediscovered how to speak. He listened, and they were able to come out of themselves and join him in a place of mutual connection. Being heard draws us out in other ways as well. The poet John Cox describes listening to being listened to like this. When someone deeply listens to you, it is like holding out a dented cup you've had since childhood and watching it fill up with cold, fresh water. When it balances on top of the brim, you are understood. When it overflows and touches your skin, you are loved. When someone deeply listens to you, the room where you stay starts a new life, and the place where you wrote your first poem begins to glow in your mind's eye as if gold has been discovered. When someone listens deeply to you, your bare feet are on the earth, and a beloved land that seems distant is now at home within you. I do not know why Jung's listening helped mentally ill women find words, or why deep listening causes the place the poet wrote his first poem to glow, or why, as Carl Rogers once said, when I have been heard, I am able to re-perceive my world in a new way and go on. Maybe it is because, as the Buddhists say, we are not really individual selves at all. Instead, all coexist within the other. Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh calls it interbeing. Or maybe being truly heard is profound because human beings are social animals and cultural beings. It is in that space between ourselves, in relationship, that we create each other. However, the transformational power of being heard is real. We can and we do experience it. Psychologists and counselors use it to heal people. Community organizers use it to rally people to action. When listening and being heard come together, when we create a shared presence together, compassion, love, and transformation is possible. The theologians have attempted to name the power that arises when people experience connection that provides the ground for transformation. Henry Nelson Wyman called it the creative interchange. James Luther Adams called it the community creating power. Martin Buber called it the I-Thou relationship. One purpose of church, I believe, is to prepare people for the experience of interconnection with all that exists. Many of us believe that this is true, But as we move as separate selves through the world, experiencing our interconnectedness is something else again. Another purpose of church is to help us become loving, compassionate people with the power to transform the world. We try to create beloved community here at Wolf so we can create beloved community in the world. Beauty is the harvest of presence, says David White. Presence is the ability to be fully attentive with something or someone else. When we harvest the present that exists between two, we discover a beauty, a place without separation, without distance, without fear of another. Beauty is holy ground. Truly listening and being heard is holy ground as well, and for the exact same reasons. We try to make our spiritual and religious homes beautiful because we instinctively know that beauty is holy. We also need to make listening and the ability to be present together central to congregational life. Listening and being heard is a communal spiritual practice, just as worship is a communal spiritual practice. We practice them because they have the power to change us. Like any practice, however, they take discipline and commitment. And also like any spiritual practice, it is helpful to get a little direction and support. Unitarian Universalists use small group ministry to practice listening and being heard. Small group ministry first started in large Christian megachurches as a way to keep people connected in 5,000-person congregations. A group of UU ministers saw quickly the potential for such a program in congregations. UUs want connection with each other and to engage in the ongoing search for truth and meaning. And while Sunday morning worship is clearly central to this purpose, it does not have the intimacy required for transformation through deep connections with one another. Over the years, many UU congregations have developed small group ministry programs as a way to expand a ministry of listening and being heard. In a small group ministry program, groups of 6 to 10 people meet once or twice a month for 2 hours. The group opens with centering words and lights a chalice. They then check in and share important happenings in their lives. A trained facilitator introduces a topic such as hospitality or gratitude or love or forgiveness with a quote or a short explanation and a series of questions. Each person responds to the topic from their personal experience or personal reflections, and everyone listens fully. It is not a conversation. No one offers advice or argues. They listen. Afterwards, there might be a discussion where participants share thoughts and insights that came up for them as they listened. This, again, is not to give advice or to argue, but to deepen the sharing experience. At the end of the session, each person says what they liked about it and what they wished might be different to make things better in the future. And the session ends with closing words. Members commit to meet anywhere from 8 weeks to a year. Groups have an open chair to remember the intent of welcoming and hospitality to future members. They additionally commit to doing a service project for the congregation or the larger community. As groups reach more than 10 members, they birth a new group, sending half of the members out to start another group and inviting others into the old group. Our congregation is restarting Chalice Circles, Wolf's small group ministry program. We will have a fall session beginning the first week of October that will meet every other week through the beginning of December, and we'll continue then we will continue the program in the spring and the winter. Over 30 people have already signed up, and sign-up sheets are available after the service for anyone who is interested. I believe that Chalice Circles are integral to the ministry of a UU congregation. Chalice Circles are not a one-time event like a UU history class, but are like worship, part of what's done month in and month out, so people listen or heard and continually have the opportunity to make meaning out of their lives. When half of a congregation or more participates in a small group ministry program month in, month out, over years, the culture of the congregation shifts to one where listening and openness to new ideas are central to the functioning of the congregation. Members feel more connected to others and are more comfortable making meeting together and exploring and sharing their own theology and faith. These are topics that most of us rarely speak about to one another because, strangely enough, church life makes no space for these conversations to happen. It was no accident that I was in the apartment of the man who was losing his words. I learned years ago that I love listening to people who are losing words and no longer care. Somehow their meaning is clearer when there are few words. They may express distress or joy or a prayer said over and over or pain, but mostly what they say is, "I am here. Are you listening? I am here. Are you listening?" It is a bantering small talk, really, a nothing of sound, like conversations we all have so often. Is it hot? Is it cold? Did you see that so-and-so play is coming to town? What about that game? Without words to confuse, I see these rituals as so beautiful. People leaning together, wanting more than anything to be seen and heard and feel that they are part of this beautiful, holy world. May Wolf help all of us remember that we are each beautiful and part of this holy world. We can rise and sing hymn 352, Find a Stillness.
We do have a few minutes for questions and comments.
A member of the dance choir, Karen Irwin, did a piece in one of the dance choir presentations, and she called it Full Face Listening.
I would like to tell a story about my auntie Lenore, who died a few years ago, just short of her 99th birthday. And she had dementia in her later years. And the funny thing was, when she did not have dementia, I used to sometimes lie to her as a matter of convenience, just to kind of keep things moving along. After she got dementia, I couldn't not lie to her anymore because she could always tell.
My good friend's mother is very far along in her Alzheimer's path, and she has lost all her words except one. And when her little granddaughter comes to visit her, her one word is that all she can say is, "Wow, wow."
Awesome.
I consider myself a good listener. But people also say I'm an interrupter. And I get so excited when I'm listening to somebody talk that I throw out my own ideas. So could you talk about that a little bit? And then my other question deals with, I have a number of friends and family who are hard of hearing, and they don't hear things, and it's difficult to have a conversation. So if you could help me with that also.
So I also am an interrupter, and so if I do that, you should stop me, because it is one of my faults. What happens for me, actually, is like I just want to show them how in tune I am with what they're saying so I can finish the sentence, which may or may not, in fact, be the case. And so my practice is to really watch myself. I really spend a lot of time paying attention to that I'm about to leap, and then I just try to bring myself in. It's an imperfect practice, but that's how I've been trying to manage that. Because really, people just want to say what they're saying. They don't want to be interrupted. They don't want to bond with you in that particular way, actually, usually. The hard of hearing thing, I think, is really difficult. I think it is a really sad and difficult loss for people. And I actually don't have a lot to say about that, except that it's really important to listen to what they say about how they can hear you. People usually know, like, do you have to look at them really? But, you know, if you're having a group conversation, it is so hard for people who can't hear because hearing aids don't block out all that ambient sound that gets in the way and gets fuzzy. And I wish I had answers to that. I want them to fix the hearing aid.
As a person who is hard of hearing and wears hearing aids, I would ask people to begin with not to be frustrated with us. I've spoken to a lot of other hard of hearing people, and we all have a very similar experience, which is that people don't like to repeat, and they often repeat in the same, or they won't get any louder. And eventually they get annoyed. And we beg you, please don't be annoyed with us. And please understand that our impairment is as valid an impairment as other people who have impairments that are sort of more visible. And that's the thing that I think we would all ask the most.
I really resonated with you saying that words are only 70%. When my mom...
7%. Only 7.
7%.
Words is almost nothing, which is why text and email communication is such a terrible idea. Okay.
Yeah. And I used to visit my mother at West Hills Nursing Home, and every day when I walked in, there would be a lady probably in her early 60s who had lost the use of language, and she would say, "Lala." And so I thought, she wants to be seen, she wants to be heard. So I got in the habit of walking in, giving her a big smile, and she'd say, "Lala," and I'd say, "Good morning to you." And then she'd say, "La, la, la." And I'd say, "I'm fine, how are you?" And we would have this little conversation, and I would just kind of guess at what I thought she was trying to say. And I could just tell how wonderful that experience was for her to be looked at and heard. And even if I maybe guessed wrong, she still felt valued.
Having lived with someone who was slightly hard of hearing, I learned a trick, which I'll pass on to you. And that is, if they say "what," say the same thing but use different words. It adds more clues and information. If you just repeat the same thing over again, they miss it exactly the same way they missed it the first time.
So I don't really have like hearing aids or anything, but coming from a different standpoint is I have an auditory processing disorder, which means that I have a hard time understanding language and expressing myself. So that kind of means where, mainly for like group conversations, it's kind of like we're talking about basketball. And I know the topic because I've played it for many years, but little Helena goes to the folder basketball finding that topic, and by the time I come back to the conversation, we're talking about baseball. So then I put that folder back and I go back to the baseball folder. So it's like I understand what people are saying, but it's hard for me to like keep up. And whenever I try to say something, I feel like I always get interrupted. So I guess that's kind of one thing. And my little brother, he has apraxia, which is where the brain to the neurons to his mouth have a hard time connecting. So airplane would be like airplane. So I've always been really good at listening because of my little brother and trying to understand what he comes from. So I guess from a different standpoint is just for people that have a hard time understanding language is to stop and listen and don't be afraid to have them asking, "Hey, what did you mean by that? And can you repeat that again?" And such and such. That's what I wanted to say.
It does seem like following people's cues, I mean, noticing maybe that it takes a person a little bit longer to respond and just really pay attention to all the cues that we get.
We've talked about those who listen, but I think those of us who speak share part of the blame. I think those of us who are able bear some responsibility for speaking clearly. As a singer, I know how important the consonants are, and we are guilty, many of us, of being very lazy in speaking and not using the consonants properly. I think our speech becomes much more understandable if we use T's and D's correctly, and we become much more understandable, particularly for people who are hard of hearing. If we cross the T's and dot the I's and use those hard edge consonants properly. And you can tell from my accent, I don't come from here. So I grew up with very strict locution lessons. And I have to confess that Americans, and I am an American now, but you all are very lazy.
Just a comment on the hard of hearing and hearing aids. I have a good friend, and he's been in a small group that I belong to. We've been going for about 25 years now, I think, but been able to watch him and his ability to hear slowly go downhill. And he started out with, I think, one hearing aid, then he got two, then he got something like they call stereo aids. His latest is a deal where he gets the hearing aids and he can tune those so that a lot of that, if he's in a quiet place with two or three people, he can set it one way. If he's at a party and doesn't want to hear everything that goes on, you can set it the other way. The last time we met, he said that the best hearing aids that are made now no longer suffice, and two people that he's been seeing about this for years are recommending cochlear implants. And he says that's the coming thing, and I think I have noticed more. I mean, you can see they're very visible unless someone has long hair, but at least he will be able to hear. So,
just comment. So I back to the whole thing about listening, which is it is hard when you cannot hear the words, but only 7% of our communication is words, and so we really need to sort of expand that idea of what hearing is.
Thank you, Reverend Tracy.